Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing the second interview I've done with the talented and interesting Susan Greenhill. Susan is here in Sarasota, starring in the one-woman production of Becoming Dr. Ruth, about the extraordinary life of Dr. Ruth Westheimer. Susan is not only amazingly capable of doing this role, ironically, she actually has firsthand experience of appearing with Dr. Ruth on Dr. Ruth's TV show. Listen to Susan talk about this interesting experience and other interesting roles that she's played. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down from nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about recognizing, discovering, understanding, embracing who you really are, and then allowing yourself to be that person. As a therapist, I am continually aware of how many of us are not being who we really are. How many of us have figured out ways to suppress, to deny, to forget important things about ourselves? How our childhoods, sometimes with intention and some... No. How experiences that we have in our childhood, that could be in our family of origin, it could be in school, unfortunately, it can be in our religious institution or the culture that we're born into, we get the idea that something about us is ugly, unattractive, it's going to bring criticism or embarrassment or neglect, sometimes even punishment or abuse. And we can't afford that. In our childhoods, we don't have the capacity to say, well, too bad, that's who I am, and you just have to live with it. We certainly can't say that to our parents, and we can't say that to our teachers, and we can't say that to our religious organizations. And so what we do instead is we figure out a way first to hide it, pretend it's not there, And then usually we get so good at that that we actually forget. We forget that we had a funny bone, that things struck us funny and we had spontaneous, really endearing laughter, which other people thought was somehow ugly or inappropriate or funny. We forget that we had a real interest in numbers or flowers or painting or music. We forget it. We bury it. I call that burying it undercover. And the person that's left, those qualities which went down okay, or at least didn't get us into trouble, or at least didn't get us isolated or hurt, those qualities that are left, I call those our cover story. Just like a spy has a cover story, they present something that's not actually the truth because the truth would get them into trouble. Well, this is exactly the same thing, except that the spy knows that it's a fiction. And by the time we come into adulthood, and sometimes even in teenage years, we no longer think it's a fiction. We think it really is us. And so we are denied access, sometimes to very important aspects of ourselves. So the Lynn Show is about making this point, about saying, do you think that you had to suppress, deny, ignore, forget something that was really important to you about yourself? And one of the ways that I try and highlight this is by interviewing people who make their living or their life with an art. Because people who do that, at least in the area of their work, are exactly who they really are. We make it much too hard to be an artist in this culture. And so the people who do it because they can't not do it. And today's interview is no exception. Susan Greenhill is an actor. She knew from kindergarten, when she was drafted into the plays of older children, that this is who she was. This was where she belonged. This is what she called home. Unfortunately for Susan, her parents didn't actually see it that way. And so, being a good girl, she majored in education and tried to be a teacher. But fortunately for us, and fortunately for Susan, she never lost her connection to who she really was. And soon, very soon, although I think Susan thinks it wasn't soon enough, she said, no, no, I can't do this. I am really an actor. Has dedicated her life to this work, and we have benefited from it here in Sarasota many times and are about to benefit from it again. So listening to Susan is listening to someone who found her way back to herself, and that's what I want you to hear. And so now, without saying another word about it, is Susan Greenhill.
I am here with Susan Greenhill again. It's yes. Such a pleasure. Oh, my
Thank
God.
Thank you.
So, a couple of things. So I want to talk about the play. This is Becoming Dr. Ruth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. You
yes.
are such the perfect person.
Dr. Ruth?
Dr. Yes. Ruth? Do you do it in dialect?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did the whole thing in the wig and glasses. And,
really?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so I want to talk about that.
Okay.
Actually, why don't we just talk about that first?
Sure.
Okay, good. So tell me whatever you want to say about this play. I mean, how you got it, what you thought of it, whether it was difficult for you, and what the experience of doing it is.
Well, first I have to say that I met Dr. Ruth.
Really?
Yes. Many years ago in the 1980s, she had a television show called The Dr. Ruth Show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I auditioned. And they hired me.
As what?
As, well, they were, she, what they did was they hired actors, and they gave you a scenario of what your relationship or sexual problem was.
So you were a client,
yes.
You were a presenter. You
yes,
were a...
and I went on with her, and we improvised around my problem.
What was your problem?
Well, it's actually similar to one that's in the show. My problem was that I had a boyfriend. I was a young woman. I had a boyfriend. And for some reason, he wouldn't ever see me on the weekends. And so I went to see Dr. Ruth and told her that. He was a great boyfriend. We'd been seeing each other for a while. I really liked him, but he didn't see me on the weekends. And so she asked me all, you know, kinds of questions around that. And finally what came up was that she felt he was married and that he was home with his family on the weekends. And part of the funny thing was that I had relatives upstate who just happened to be watching the show and didn't realize that
you were acting.
That she had actors on it, because she doesn't believe in reality shows. She believes in the privacy of people's sexuality. And
oh, that's fascinating.
Yes.
So she must have been horrified by Dr. Phil.
I mean, I've heard her talk about it, and she does not disparage anybody else. She just makes it very clear where she is on this issue.
Good for her.
And that you will never see her on a reality show or have real people on, that she hires actors and people's sexuality is private unless they bring it up. And even when they bring it up, nobody ever identifies themselves on her radio show or...
Right.
Anything.
So what did your relatives do?
Well, they called me because they were thought I was like, must be so upset. And so it was very sweet. And I explained, no, that I was really quite happy because I was an actor acting and had a job.
Right. Oh, God, that is so funny.
And that I was not involved with it, that my boyfriend was still my boyfriend and everything.
And you saw each other on the weekend.
Right, and he was not married.
Right,
so
right.
Life was okay.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, but so interestingly, I mean, you got an opportunity to see her up close and personal. I mean, really.
I know, and I've been telling people now to be playing her.
Is she still alive?
Oh, yeah. Her birthday was June 4th, and she turned 86.
Oh, that's not so bad.
Right. And she's still speaking, giving seminars, teaching classes, I believe, at Yale or Princeton, one of those.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Has she seen the play, do you know?
Oh, yeah. She's been very involved in the whole process of it.
Has it been done before? This is not...
Yes. Yeah. It was done... I think up at Great Barrington and then in New York.
Oh, okay. So
I didn't see it, but yes, it was.
Okay, so who auditioned you? How did you get... No, they just said we want Susan for this.
They were thinking of this, and it's very sweet. They were thinking of this, and they said, well, if it happens, we'll let you know, and so... Then I got a call from James, and he said, what are you doing these particular dates? I said, well, I finish on this date, and it turned out the next day I flew down here. I finished another show, and then I flew down, so it worked out.
What were you doing?
Perfectly. I was doing kind of a very crazy play down in New York called Primal Play, where I played a British mother who disguises herself as a gorilla and runs off into the jungle to live as a primate.
Really?
Yes. And her costume for the gorilla-ness, which I didn't know what it would be, was a mink coat with a helmet-type device with a big gorilla head on it.
Susan is showing me over her head with her hands.
Actually, that was a piece
of
art.
Hot as hell.
So, yeah.
No?
Not really. The theaters were so air-conditioned.
Oh, yeah, good. And we were all cold. You were comfortable.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So what happens? I mean, what is the motivation behind a British mother becoming a...
Her daughter is a primatologist who takes her to Tanzania to be her secretary, and she falls in love with Africa and the chimpanzees, gorillas, and decides that part of her nature is to be in this world. And so she grabs what she has on hand to go into the jungle.
Does she survive?
She survives. Her daughter finds her and does not recognize her. Thinks she's a gorilla and starts to study her mother. So it's loosely based on Jane Goodall.
Yeah, yeah.
Who
right.
took her mom to...
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, she took her mom with her on her trips. And
what a great idea.
So, yeah, it was fascinating and very well received. And the audience sat above, and there was another woman who played a full-time chimpanzee. She was the chimpanzee. Right. And the audience was above, so they were kind of looking down on the jungle, the forest, the zoo, or whatever it was. So it was fascinating.
So did you speak as the...
Yes.
As the gorilla?
I spoke as the gorilla. Now, there is gorilla primate sign language. And there's a very famous gorilla whose name I forget now, who has a huge vocabulary and understands signing. This is sad.
Right.
I'm sad, or... Here, I'm frowning. I'm pointing to different things on
the
podcast. They're not
going to see it. But
this means because.
Oh, she's making a sign
across
a
your
big,
forehead. And
a big C on her face, right on her forehead,
yes,
right?
So I know some gorilla sign language. But the part of the play is that it's either... we're so connected that you can either understand what I was saying or you understand the sign language.
So you were speaking as well when you were doing the sign language? Is that what you mean?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah. And,
Like the chimpanzee understood me. We talked. And
right.
I taught her how to drink tea and play. I was going to teach her how to play backgammon.
But you got rescued.
No. I still live in the jungle.
You still live in the jungle?
Yeah.
And the daughter just made peace with it?
Somewhat recognized it was her mother and left, but still treated her like a primate.
Wow.
And didn't really recognize her in the play. And so...
That is so interesting to me.
It's a fascinating play. Terrific writer.
Yeah. Kristen. I mean, you know, one doesn't have to go so far as to become a gorilla to become something very different than... Your family mm-hmm. thought you'd be that you
yes,
thought you were.
Yes, and to have to take that risk to really find out who you are.
Yes.
If nobody tampered with you, if nobody had any ideas of who you should be or how you.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but the thrust of the Lynn Show is the idea that we. Few of us are, and in my view, all of us ought to be, all that we really are.
Yes.
Right.
I do remember that. That was part of what...
Right. It's exactly right. We talked
connected.
About that. Right.
Yeah.
And so this play, of course, talks mm-hmm. about that, you know,
mm-hmm.
that so many of us are living a life that was dictated to us,
right.
but has nothing to do with who we are.
Who we are. I got a terrific opportunity to... work on a play that has to do with transgender
mm-hmm.
and a person finding their place on the spectrum
right.
of male and female.
Oh, my.
And that how big the spectrum is
yes,
and
yes.
that nobody can dictate where you particularly fit on it.
Well.
And how the family copes and how... how the parents are, how the grandmother, no matter what the grandchild sees, only
what she needs to see.
Yes.
Right.
Leave
them alone. Yes, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So Dr.
Yeah.
Ruth, of course,
yes.
is an example of a woman who has broken all the molds.
Every single one, and some that I'm sure no one knows or would picture.
Right. So you want to talk... Just talk about her and what
sure.
you know about her in this context before we talk about the play.
Sure. Well, in this context, what I knew was that she was a sex therapist. I had no idea of the of her life before.
Well, you know, before we do that,
yeah.
even
yeah.
her being a sex therapist is a big deal.
Right. No one was doing it then.
No one was saying
the words.
No, that's exactly right. And she's a woman.
Yes.
Right?
And she's a small woman.
Right. And she's with an accent, right, mm-hmm. right. And so coming from her, she must have run into a lot of obstacles, a lot of people thinking, you shouldn't do this, you can't do this, what are you doing, who do you think you are? No?
I have to say, in terms of the story here, the obstacles were, in terms of her progression, there was a natural progression, and the obstacles were she was a single parent, she had to work and go to school at the same time. And it took her quite a while to find her niche. The whole thing with the radio was kind of a fluke from being in a particular situation and saying yes to,
what was presented.
She was at Cornell at the sex therapy training program, which was another very interesting how she got there,
but
not
wanna,
by regular.
Do you want to say?
Sure. She had admired Dr. Helen Singer Kaplan's work for many years, and she went to hear her speak. She was the only person in the room who wasn't a medical doctor, and she got her nerve up to ask her a question. She asked her question. She ran up to her afterwards, told Dr. Kaplan how much she admired her work, and could she come and visit her sex therapy training program at Cornell. And she says this was on a Wednesday. The next day, she was there. Okay, this is a single, the next
right,
day.
Right, she showed
can
up.
I visit, and
I'm there.
She was there.
Right.
And that, to me, was amazing. While she was there, they got a letter asking if anybody there in this program would come to speak to the managers of all the radio stations in New York City on sex, on the need for sex education.
Good grief.
Yeah. Just, you know, all it was put out to everyone in the program. She called and said, I'll come. And there was no money.
No.
No fee.
No.
She was up at Cornell.
Right.
Came down to New York and spoke to all the radio people. And she was very frightened of speaking to them.
Amazing.
And from that, she got a 15-minute, which is in the show too, a 15-minute radio program that started at midnight.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yes.
But the first act, the going to Dr. Kaplan and saying, mm-hmm. I want to do this, mm-hmm. that was her own.
That was her own initiation.
Going
to see
right.
Dr. Kaplan, studying
right.
her.
Right, right.
She had worked at Planned Parenthood. That opened her eyes. She got a part-time job while her kids were in school. She was married by then. And it was then that she realized choices. Mm-hmm. The choices that people don't have.
Right.
And that's what she wanted to give people, the education and the knowledge to make the choices, and the choices for happiness.
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 If you don't mess up your life, you have happiness?
Well, I think if you mess up your life and go on,
right,
then you can still have happiness.
Happiness. Right.
That there's no timetable. And the fact that she was able to live the life she did and go on and find happiness and stay so dedicated to love, physical and every kind of, to me, is amazing and thrilling to play.
No kidding.
And she's much stronger that way than I am, you know, and a lot of us are, that she, what she went through.
Well, do you want to talk a little about
that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. First thing was, at 10 years old, she was born in Frankfurt, Germany. And at 10 years old, her dad was put in a work camp. There weren't concentration camps yet. That came after. And she was part of she was selected to be part of the Kinder Transport. Was you had to be a Jewish child, under German Jew, under 16, who was either an orphan or with a parent in a camp. And you would be sent to, 300 children were picked. You could be sent to Switzerland, to the Netherlands, to Britain. Britain took more, was the only country that would take more than 300 children. Belgium and France, four countries agreed. She was chosen, so at 10 years old, she was put on a train to go to Switzerland, to a home for Swiss children, where all the children from the Kinder Transport were then treated as servants. And she has a line that she thought that she was there, that they were there to take care of her, but what it turned out to be, they were there to be the servants of the Swiss children. Wow. And the children were forbidden to go anywhere near the transport.
Kids,
yeah. So, I mean, that was one obstacle, huge thing.
Right.
And then from there, when the war ended, she went to Israel. People came and said, if you come to Israel, well, you know, you can go back to school, you can be a teacher, you can do all these things. So she went to live on a kibbutz. Mm-hmm. And that didn't quite turn out the way.
Yeah, we'll see it in the play,
yes.
Right.
So, I mean, all of these things, and what I'm not saying is, what I'm leaving is, you know, what happened to her parents.
Yeah, that's right. And that's is that all in the play?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, we want to leave them something.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, good. All right. So, the irony of you actually having had an interaction with her is remarkable.
It's really remarkable. And to have experienced her therapeutically.
Yes, yeah, to have been on the receiving end.
And she was so, what I remember, people have asked me, like, how long, like, I can't remember if we had one take, two take, 20, I don't know. I know that for me, any job, I get very nervous. Mm-hmm. And here was this such loving woman. I remember clearly how relaxed I felt.
And how engaged you were.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, and she was so there, so present. I was like, oh, if I ever go, you know, she'd be a good therapist.
Yeah, right. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Okay, so now, the last time I saw you was 2011.
Wow.
So what's been going on for you since then and now?
I've been all over the place.
Oh, really?
I was out in Fayetteville, Arkansas, doing a show, which a place I never expected to be. It turned out to be thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
It's
hard to remember everything that you've done, right?
Yes,
right.
In a way. And also in the other part of my life, which I think we had talked about last time, I have groups for women on body image.
I was going to ask you about
this.
I was going to ask you. So because at that time, you had slowed down on that.
And I still stayed slowed down because I was working so much. And I think that I want to be there. Group. So
tell me the organization, how it's set up, when you do it, how you do it.
Well, to tell you the truth, it slowed down even more from that because of how much work.
Right.
So I decided that I would make a website.
Ah!
You know, as a way to start my groups back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hit a stretch and I was like, I want to do this. This is important to me. It's a value. And unfortunately, body image for women does not go out of style.
Oh, my God.
It's not like we get to a place of, oh, solve that.
Right.
You know? Right. So, and also some people were asking me if I would. So I decided I'm going to make a website. I'm going to put it up. Half is going to be acting. Half is going to, and then I'll start from doing my groups again.
Right.
Well, once I put the website up, what I intended was the work, the door and the energy and the effort to be around the groups. And what happened was I got even busier.
Well, acting.
Acting.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, the thing I got was you take an action.
Yes.
And you put it out there and the door is open. You just... not
you just don't necessarily know which one.
Right.
That's right.
Exactly.
Right.
And so
right.
It's wonderful in either way. So okay. I'll see what happens after this.
Yeah, but talk to me about
how the groups work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
What happens is I start out with a series of 4 workshops, which are like once a week over a month. And I do that because I want to welcome people in.
Mm-hmm.
They can try it out, see if this
works for
them.
Yeah. Then they come back or they don't.
Right.
Right. And is it 1 hour, 3 hours?
I like at least 3 hours mm-hmm. each session because you come in, you don't know what to expect.
Right, right.
And you see how you kind of open up, evolve. It gives time to work with whatever is
well, and
coming
to feel safe with the group.
Absolutely.
And, you,
and
right,
me, and
right.
learn me. I'm,
right, right,
I'm
right,
learning
right.
you
right.
to see what works.
Right.
And so you commit to the 4 sessions. Usually by the end of the 4, there's a
core
that wants to
go
continue.
On. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And so then
it goes on.
Do.
Right,
it
right, right. I
it
got
goes
it.
On.
Right.
And sometimes it goes on for quite a long time, either because I'm working in New York.
Right.
Or because my jobs are short enough, I can take a little break and we can
right.
reconvene.
Right.
And the work still goes on even when you're not in
right, right, right.
Group. And sometimes people find themselves at a certain point finding different things and moving on
right.
naturally and, you know, with... go,
yeah,
do.
Right, with blessing,
yeah,
right,
yes,
right, right, right,
yeah,
right,
that's,
right.
A, that's right. what it's for, to
right.
make these groups, so you can take it or leave it, because you have it.
So, this seems to me to have a little bit more than simply the issue of body image.
It is, because everything feeds into it,
right.
And it's the place, in a lot of ways, we start, and what brings us into the problem.
Right.
Okay, so the food or the anxiety or just not liking oneself. And body image stuff comes in all shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
And some people come in, I need to lose weight. Some, I need to eat food. Some, I just want to be happy where I am.
Right.
And I work.
And wherever they still are, that's where you start.
That's where
right.
we, that's
right.
where
right.
we start.
Right, right, right.
And I have also found that it works much better in groups, the kind of
mm-hmm.
thing I do, than one-on-one. Because somebody does something, and I use the arts in the groups
mm-hmm.
because the, as well as other stuff, but the desire to create, the
so
desire
the artists,
to sing,
they
sing, dance,
really?
Act, draw,
really?
Yeah,
yeah,
whatever,
yeah.
because that
do you,
energy.
They get to choose what they want, or you offer
yeah,
them something,
yeah.
or you say,
or,
sing a song, do a dance?
Or we're working around this. I'm thinking of us all doing, there's a thing I do called body maps, where
mm-hmm.
we all make body maps, and which is usually where I start, because it's gentle, and it's
mm-hmm.
said, I have used... acting in people come in with stuff that they need to express.
Right.
And it can...
So you write a little play of their stuff.
Or somebody's writing that really touches them, that says something that they can't really say.
Right, right, right.
So they bring that in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Read it. Or a piece of music. There's no... the keys to us are kind of special.
Self,
and not limited to talk.
Right, right. Yeah.
And
no, definitely.
And, and stuff lives in our body in different places. And so in my training, it's a lot body, I don't know, body-centered. But I work with people's bodies, people's energy,
mm-hmm.
Okay. where things are stuck.
You said in your training...
Mm-hmm.
What training are we talking about?
I went To a four-year training program called Biotransformational Energetics. Well, actually, it had a slightly different name, but when I looked online, that name was a fun, whoa. I didn't want anybody confused, so I changed it slightly. Mm-hmm. And it was a four-year program that I went into because I had my own issues. Mm-hmm. So right. Many. And I tried so many different things.
Wow.
And this was a thing that worked for me.
Wow.
So I decided to...
Give it away.
Yeah,
I got
it out there.
I got it.
And I know that it works, and it worked for me.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. It's wonderful. The last time we spoke, mm-hmm. I asked you these two questions. The one, you know, how did this career begin for you?
Mm.
And I remember, I listened, so I know, you know, that you told me that when you were in kindergarten,
yes.
they chose you, with some other kids, to participate in musicals.
Yes.
And you, it was very funny, you said, and I don't sing, but I didn't know that.
Right, exactly.
That was very funny. And you said in that interview that you felt at home.
Yes.
That you had found a home. I wonder if you could say anything more about that, about what that felt like, what that led to, you know, because then you jumped immediately to college from there.
Hmm.
And so I'm wondering if you would just try and go back to that early place and see.
It was joyous to me.
Mm-hmm.
Truly, I understood why it was called play. That it was an exciting and thrilling but a very connected kind of play. And literally, in these plays that I did for years, and I wanted to be an actor, but my parents felt that was too risky.
Yeah.
Too, you know, insecure, too much, you know, we don't know. And at one level, they were probably right. So I pursued I decided to be a teacher.
Yeah, I know, but you know what's so interesting is that when you say, you know, that your parents thought it was a risky business, which, I mean, they
it's
were,
true.
Right? There's no, right. But they were not right about you.
No. They were not.
Right.
And that's what, and now they're my biggest fans. They come to every, they'll be here.
Good. I remember now. They live on the other coast,
yes,
right? Okay, good. Okay,
but they were not right about me
and
my truest nature.
That's right. And that's kind of what we've been talking about.
Yes.
So here we have this conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have you clearly knowing
mm-hmm.
this is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And your parents saying, essentially, don't be that.
Exactly.
Right. So do you remember that as a conflict for yourself?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, that's not something I feel comfortable sharing.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
I mean, what I will say about it, it was the hugest conflict.
Yes, I can't imagine that it wasn't.
Yes.
Yeah, it's what we were talking about before.
Exactly.
You know, this idea that who you are gets, for most people, I mean, what's so startling about you is that you held on.
I held on, and also at a certain point, my parents got it.
Well, that's very nice, but that's not, you couldn't count on that.
Right.
You know, that's the problem, is you can't count on that.
Right.
That in order to honor who you are, you have to honor it, even if they're not going to get.
Right.
You know, luckily for you, good for them.
Yes.
But still.
I came to a point where my happiness was worth everything to me, as opposed to my despair.
Yes.
And I had, unfortunately, I had to get to that point.
Well, but, you know, it's interesting. Yes, unfortunately, you had to get to that place, but that
I
you
did. I did, and I came out.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Because, what is it? You know, most men live lives of quiet desperation.
Yes.
Who am I quoting?
Somebody
Dickens
who knew
or something.
What they were talking
right,
about.
Exactly, you know. But really, that's what happens, is that most people don't. They settle for despair. Mm-hmm. They don't. Mm-hmm. So do you have any idea where you got the strength or the inner fortitude or the whatever, I don't know what it is?
You know, it's funny when you're phrasing it like that, because I always kind of, or in the past, have looked at myself as, oh, if I had more strength, I wouldn't have gone through. I would have kind of put my foot down earlier or said, you know, no, yeah, yeah. I'm doing this. And truly, I don't know. Now, what I've gotten, and this kind of ties in, what I've gotten to see so clearly working on this piece is that from an early age, choosing to be happy.
Yes.
So somewhere was that seed. It got, you know, smushed down.
And, right.
Whatever. And it took quite a long time, you know, to me to...
For you to have the courage to say, I choose happy.
Right. I choose this no matter what, because the alternative to me was too painful. Now, somebody may have made that choice, you know, at different times on that spectrum, but...
And unfortunately, lots of people never make that choice.
Right.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
Right. And that's what... Somebody was giving this graduation speech, somebody famous, and was saying, look, you can fail at something that you're miserable, that makes you miserable.
Right.
You might as well try something that makes you happy.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, it's easier said than done.
It is.
It's easier said than done. Yes, you do. And I really want to make this point that that choice can be made, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not easy.
It's not easy, and also it doesn't mean throwing everything away and, you know, I'm only going to... It's a conscious choice that you need support with.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do alone.
Yes, I agree.
But there is support, or I found support, and other people find support, to either discover their truth or to get free of the pain to embrace it.
Yeah. It's wonderful. I don't know. Do you know who David Howard is?
No.
He's an actor. He's been part of the Oslo Repertory Company on and off for many years. He's a really extraordinary actor. And he tells the story of his parents were at the Lithuanian, I think, immigrants. Mm-hmm. And they chose the careers for their children. And David was supposed to be a labor lawyer. And he did it. He went through all of it. He passed the bar.
Mm-hmm.
He began to work as a labor lawyer. And I think he was in his early 30s when he said to them, well, I did it. Now I'm going to be an actor because that's who I am.
That's fun. I was teaching. Mm-hmm. And I said, acting has got to be easier than this.
But you wound up to be a teacher anyway.
Yes, I did.
You know.
But what I...
Yes, teach what you love, who you are.
And I taught acting, and then it morphed into the next...
Well, you use yourself.
I do.
You do. You use yourself. Whatever it is that you find and get and learn, you give it away.
Yeah,
it's great. It's so great.
And
all
I
right.
get from that.
Of course you do. Otherwise it doesn't work.
Right.
Right? You know? People feel it. They think, oh, what is that? No, good. Okay, so the other question I asked you, which you gave me a lovely answer to, but I'm going to ask it again.
I hope I remember.
It doesn't matter. I want a different answer now.
Okay.
is, you know, having given all these years to this work, would you say anything about what that is like?
Well, it is a different answer right now. I have gone in my life from playing the kind of what I call "Hey, baby, roll," you know. Let's play, very kind of ditzy or whatever. And now I'm playing the grandmothers between like 75 and 90, you know, consistently.
It's amazing.
This is young. Dr. Ruth is 69. She's...
Well, in Savannah, you were not young.
I was not young, but then I was 91 in 4,000 miles. And So.
Oh, did you play 4,000 Miles?
Yeah,
we just had it here. What a
did you?
Oh, you must have been wonderful in it.
I was very proud of it. I was like, okay, if they want me to, you know, and I didn't know how it was going to be, but Bert, all the Jewish grandmothers out there lived in me, through me, so it was very, very special.
It's a great role.
Yeah, it is. Where'd they do that?
They did it here at the Oslo.
Did they? Mm-hmm. I thought they did, because...
Yeah. It was a lovely production.
Beautiful.
Okay, so
so you find yourself different,
right?
Because I am at a different. I'm now in many casts. The oldest person in it. I don't have the sequin gowns and sexy costumes. I have, you know. So it's like, oh, this it's new.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so I'm learning in a way this territory.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, you don't look like you would be able to do that, so they must
well. Oh, this little film I did, I think I was playing 104, and they put this, I would show you a picture, but I switched phones,
oh, okay.
And it did this, like, latex on my face stuff in my hair. My mother, you know, saw it, she was like, Oh,
don't let Martin, my husband, don't let Martin see that.
But so for me, it's one, moving into being older myself,
right.
But moving into
the idea right.
of what is theatrically older and how the what the writing is for... I'm like, excuse me, Dr. Ruth is right. Older people are sexual.
Yeah.
Can we have some stuff that reflects
sex?
That.
Right.
You
right,
know?
Right.
That it's not just the kids that,
Yeah,
things may, I'm not saying there isn't change.
Right.
But there's, but it's still here.
Right.
Yes,
so
where
right,
is that reflected in the, I guess I'm putting a call out there to, you know, playwrights.
Calling all playwrights, right. Well, they have to get older to write those plays.
yes. And to look not only, and to look at, you may be the mother, you may be the grandmother,
right.
But and you may be somebody's intense and sexual love.
That's right. That's right.
Maybe not the love in your 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s or even, but you are somebody's and maybe great love. Mm-hmm. Or you may be in the process of finding your great love.
Yes. And sex can be as exciting and engaging and compelling later as it was earlier. I think this is a big shock to a lot of people.
Yes,
I know.
I think it is. And then, and the also the flip side, the reality of, well, a million people had sexual problems when they were young.
Yes, this
you
is
know
true.
What I mean?
Yes.
It, like, forget that.
Yes, it didn't.
That we were all like,
right.
Oh,
yeah, here we go.
Was
right.
Fine.
Right.
You know,
right.
No problems. I was, you know. And yes, there are things to definitely work with.
Yeah,
changes. So you work with them.
Right. Okay. All right. Good. Do you? I don't remember. Do you write?
I did write a play.
Yes. I didn't remember that.
Well, no. With Martin, my husband, and then to tell you the truth, it was not very good. So I put it in a drawer. I learned a lot. I loved the process of doing it. I did write a one act with a wonderful co-author who goes by the name of Tammy Faye Starlight. She works all over the place. And Tammy was a student of mine. And so I did write a one act, which I have to say is very good, about the worst acting teacher in the world and her two students.
Have you done it?
Did it once a short time. I haven't done it around, but I should take that out again and read it and see.
Well, I mean, you know, you
can, it is.
What have you got to? Excuse me, but
really, what have I got to lose?
All right. So, one sort of overall thing about what this life as an actor has meant to you. Can you?
Yeah, I get to go to work and do something that I love.
Yeah.
And make money from and be middle class. And it's not only doing plays. I used to do a lot of radio. Mm-hmm. I loved that. Commercials. I hated auditioning for commercials. Commercials made me very nervous to audition for. And auditions used to terrify me. And it didn't come until later. But now I get to do to play and to grow and to be different places and stay home
and be happy.
Residuals. Yeah, be happy.
Right.
You know?
So, right.
Yeah, I feel very grateful.
It's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Susan.
You're welcome.
Happy and grateful. These are the feelings that you have when you are who you really are, when you are honoring yourself, doing what it is that the person you are is meant to do. And Susan, of course, is an example of someone who always knew. She knew from the beginning, from kindergarten, when, luckily for her, she was drafted into plays that were being put on by older children. She knew instinctively that she was, and of course I quote, home. That feeling that this is where I belong, this is who the me is supposed to be, this is what the me is supposed to do. Unfortunately for Susan, the circumstances of her life, her parents' concern for the security of her career, made it impossible for her to pursue this as early as she would have if she had been able to. But she never lost touch with the certainty of what was right for her to be. And as soon as she could, she embraced it with her whole heart and gave her entire life to it. And the result of that is a life in which she is happy and grateful. And when you see Susan on stage, as I was lucky enough to do last night, you see a person who is exactly where she is supposed to be. If you are anywhere near Sarasota, Florida, do not want to miss Susan Greenhill in Becoming Ruth. The play is wonderful. The performance is amazing. One can only be this good at something when one is who one is supposed to be, giving it all that they have. So it is my hope, of course, as you listen to Susan, as you listen to any of my interviews, that you are asking yourself, is there something that I knew I wanted to be, had to be, was I able to be it? Was I able to embrace it as soon as I knew it? I interviewed not so long ago a woman who remembers the very first moment she held a camera in her hands. She was very young. And for some reason, her family decided to give her a camera. And looking through the lens of that camera, she knew this is what she was meant to do. Did you have circumstances which kept you from embracing, running with, accepting the you that you really are? Is listening to Susan encouraging you to look back and see if maybe it's not too late? And this is not just about embracing an art, but maybe there was a quality about you, something that you did spontaneously, naturally, that you got teased for, criticized for, punished for, a quality you'd like to get back. Because when we are all that we really are, life is so much easier. It's hard to suppress, even if you're not aware of doing it, aspects of yourself. It takes energy. And also, we all know if we're suppressing something that there's something about us that's not quite right. We don't feel whole. So if you have any of that, and you want to think about, look into, explore the possibility of recovering something you had to hide, deny, pretend, forget, You can go up on my website, thelynneshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. thelynneshow.com. And you can get a copy of my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want and What to Do About It. You can talk to me by clicking on the email tab. Just ask me any questions. I'll be happy to hear from you. You can get me to come and talk to your group or organization. And you can listen to all of the podcasts, including this one. You can download them from my website or iTunes. I hope that you got something from this show that you can use. Something that inspired you, interested you, tickled you, something that will bring you back. Because next week, I'll be back, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten